Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on? James Bostic here, a conservative's perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Nice to be here with you. Holy cow. Whoa. Simmer down there, guys. Relax. Everything's all right. It's just, I know what I'm doing every minute. Good to be here with you. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also have a recorded version of the show that goes out on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, Mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, well, you probably should be. It is some of the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio out there. Plus, the outstanding lineup we got right here on Patriot Nation Radio. We've got, let me see. we've got me, of course, ACP, Tuesdays and Thursdays. Mark Hoffman, El Guapo. The handsome one himself is with Patriot Nation Radio live Thursday nights, and then every other Monday coming up, not last Monday, but this Monday coming up, Gary Benford, United Patriots Uprising, outstanding stuff. You want to talk about some A-listers? That's the show you need to be listening to. And we're happy to be here with you this evening. The humanitarian crisis continues on the border unabated. The suffering likewise reaching new levels. And our guest tonight, I am very happy to say, is Mr. Michael Cutler. And, you know, I always have a snappy, humorous dig for him as an introduction. But I'm not going to do that tonight. Tonight I'm going to tell you guys right here and now that when Mr. Cutler comes on the show, you guys are listening to America's foremost authority on issues concerning immigration. He's a former immigration naturalization agent, and his background is extremely broad when it comes to these things. He's dealt with issues concerning organized crime, counterterrorism, immigration fraud, all these things as they pertain to the field of immigration into the United States. And we're lucky to have him. And that's the honest to God truth, because there's this problem, this crisis that we have on our southern border that nobody wants to talk about, but we're going to talk about it tonight. That's a culmination of decades of bad behavior and misbegotten decisions. And when you see Mike out on these big shows, and you're seeing him on the big shows because there's nobody else to talk to about this. When you see him on CNN, you see him on Fox, you see him wherever, he's barely getting this thing unpacked. They're not going to give him more than 8 minutes, 10 minutes at a whack, and he can't get anything done. But here, we can unpack it. We're going into the weeds with it, and we're going into the weeds with it right now. So grab your machetes, ladies and gentlemen. Buckle up, our friend, Mr. Michael Cutler. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm great, James. Thank you for the introduction. Thank you for having me. It has been years since I've been on CNN or MSNBC, and you know what's incredible, and it's really very telling. After 9/11, because I had testified before numerous hearings, I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. It was I felt very honored that when the 9/11 Commission was put together, they sent me an email, said, we need you to come down to Washington. We want to take a deposition so that we can keep this from happening to America and Americans again. And I was on all these programs. I was averaging 30 television interviews a month. They're gone. Immigration is gone. It's not just Joe Biden. And let's understand something, because this is critical. This didn't happen overnight. Yes, what Biden is doing is outrageous. It is illegal. I would argue, if you want to talk about high crimes and misdemeanors, I think we have it right here. Forget about phone calls that may have been made by a prior president. This is a guy who has opened the floodgates at a very dangerous time. There's been hearing after hearing about how Hezbollah, which is a Middle Eastern terror organization, has its roots in Lebanon, but it is funded and directed by our good friends in Iran. And boy, do I say that with my tongue firmly glued to the inside of my cheek, our good friends in Iran. And we know from congressional testimony before a series of hearings that Hezbollah is working in Latin America with human traffickers and drug smugglers to flood America with drugs to damage us, and it does damage us, so many Americans, and also as a way to raise money for terrorism and other illicit activities. But they are also moving people into the United States, the human trafficking that you've seen being done by the cartels, Hezbollah working with them to not only bring people who want to work or may be desperate or whatever. And my heart does go out. And we've got to be clear. When people start calling the people that are flooding north criminals and invaders, we hear all this overheated rhetoric. I've arrested thousands of illegal aliens in my 30-year career. And the average illegal, and the problem is you don't know who the average one is, because if you're undocumented, we don't know what your real name is. We don't know what your affiliations are. And that's dangerous. We're going to talk about that tonight. But the guy who actually, or the woman who actually comes here out of desperation, I never saw them as my enemy or America's enemy. And when I hear this overheated rhetoric, it upsets me. It infuriates me. Desperate people resort to desperate tactics. Never forget that. And I've had people who were quite wealthy sit down, looking down their nose and say, oh, I would never run another country's border. And I say to them, when was the last time you were worried that you wouldn't be able to feed your children? And they laugh at me and they say, I've never had a problem. I said, okay, but if you lived in a third world hellhole where you couldn't make enough money to feed your children, what do you think you might be doing? Well, I would never do. I said, really? Never say never. And some of the informants that I had were illegal aliens who cooperated with me to help go after some very bad, dangerous people. And I didn't see my informants in those situations as the enemy. I remember chasing a bunch of illegal aliens at a farm in upstate New York. And a bunch of us meaning the agents, fell into an irrigation ditch. Fortunately, there was no water in it because we probably all would have drowned. The darn thing was about 3 foot wide and about 8 feet deep. And suddenly I found myself buried. I was, you know, looking up at the sky through a slit. It was a sneak preview of being buried, okay? And on my way down, my foot got stuck, and I snapped my ankle. I found one of my buddy's badges. My Ray-Ban sunglasses went missing. I guess some archaeologists will dig them up 1,000 years from now. But the point was, they pulled me out of this hole on the ground. There were about 8 of us who actually tripped and fell into this thing because you just couldn't see it. The soil was like a flat black, and the lighting was such that you really didn't see the darn thing until you stumbled into it. And the guy I was chasing was caught by other agents, and he insisted, think of this, he insisted that they bring him back to me so that he could apologize. And he said to me in Spanish, and I was trained in Spanish, part of my training, he told me in Spanish, the English translation, I am so sorry if I didn't run from you. You wouldn't have chased me, you wouldn't have fallen, and you wouldn't have gotten hurt. I apologize to you. Does that sound like your enemy? I've arrested illegal alien teenagers who were working in green grocers and were so thin they looked like people in Auschwitz. You could see their ribs. And on the way into the office, they normally got, you know, some bologna sandwich or, you know, cheese sandwich. I would take them to a kosher deli. Where else would a Jewish kid from Brooklyn go? And buy them an overstuffed roast beef sandwich with a potato knish, which they probably never had in their lives before, and a can of soda. Why? Because they are starving. We are human. And when we lose our humanity, we're in big trouble. So please understand, this overheated rhetoric is wrong, and it also makes it impossible to have a reasonable conversation with people who disagree with you. Let's get it clear. Now, I've arrested some of the worst, child molesters, murderers, terrorists, drug dealers. They are our enemies. And, you know, you and I talked about this, James, but I was on a radio program, I believe it was in New Hampshire, and this woman whose program I was on, Helen, I was a regular on the show, and I had referred to America being infested by transnational gangs. And I cited, for example, MS-13. And by the way, the gangs don't just come from Latin America. This is not about brown skin. Let's be clear about that. I'm sitting in my office in my house. It used to be my room when I was a kid. I'm living in the same house my parents bought when I was 11 years old. No place will ever feel as much like home to me. And some of my kids actually slept in this room also. So I just love this house. A lot of Cutler history here. But on the wall of my office is a certificate that I got from the government of Japan because I had helped them send a woman back to Japan, a Japanese national, who was trafficking in cocaine from the United States to Japan. And at the time, I was part of the Unified Intelligence Division of DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration. So here we have a criminal who's Japanese. I worked with the Israeli National Police, sent at least one back to Israel to stand trial for murder, and he was convicted and sentenced to a lengthy jail sentence. He had killed a Palestinian prostitute. I worked with New Scotland Yard. I arrested a suspected IRA terrorist and took a gun off him. His defense attorney was Barry Sheck, the notorious Barry, and we got along well because it was a professional relationship. I was there to do what I had to do. He was there to do what he had to do. But the guy I arrested was Irish. I've arrested Jamaican posse members of the Jamaican drug posses. I've arrested people from China. I've arrested people from Africa. So immigration isn't about one flavor. It's only one distinction is between citizens and aliens, and that's the distinction that the globalists don't want you to make. And it started with Jimmy Carter when he ordered that immigration officers no longer use the term illegal alien to describe illegal aliens. And everything that has happened since then has flowed from that bit of Orwellian newspeak. People used to say, oh, we're being politically correct. I want to abolish that concept, folks. It is a dangerous concept. What we're dealing with is Orwellian newspeak. We think with words, so if you can modify the vernacular, you modify thoughts. This is about thought control. This is about the, not the PC police, but the mind control police, if you will. It's about controlling language to control thoughts and understandings of issues. And when Carter said, no more using this term illegal alien, and by the way, the term alien is certainly not an insult or a pejorative. If you go to Section 101 of the Immigration and Nationality Act, it has all the definitions. Every section of law, whether you're dealing with firearms or narcotics or explosives or taxes, every term has to be defined. Otherwise, how can you arrest someone, for example, for possession of a firearm if you don't explain what a firearm is or a dangerous drug and so forth? Well, under Section 101 of the Immigration Act, which is where all the definitions are, the term alien has a very short, clear description. An alien is defined as any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. Where in the world is the insult? There isn't it. The reason that Carter and those who followed want to eliminate the word alien is because it provides clarity to the conversation. And when you're a con artist, when you're a swindler, when you're a grifter, you swindle people. You con them. You make promises you know damn well you can't keep. You convince them to believe things that aren't true. And if you think, oh, only idiots would fall for those kinds of scams, think of how many wealthy and successful people fell victim to Bernie Madoff. People who were millionaires, people who were members of Congress, people who were in the entertainment industry, all kinds of people. They lost their shirt to a liar. And that's what we're dealing with when we talk about most politicians. Not all. There are some good ones. You could probably count them on the fingers of one hand. Because the nature of politics is about deception. It's a magic act. I know I've said it before, but I want to quickly give you my analogy. Politicians, to me, are like a combination of prostitutes and magicians. You might wonder where the link is. Well, prostitutes will assume any position, no matter how dangerous, uncomfortable, or contrary to common sense, for the right price. Couldn't you say the same thing about the average politician? When they get a campaign contribution, that's Orwellian newspeak. Campaign contribution, my backside. It's a bribe. It's a bribe. And as much as we all detest lobbyists, politicians are the employees of the lobbyists. They take their money and they do what they're told. Just like when some guy works at a factory and his boss says, "Hey, Charlie, I want you to paint that car blue." "Yes, sir." And he paints the car blue because the guy that writes his check just told him to paint the car blue. And when the politicians get the money from these special interest groups and that person says, "You need to sign off on a bill so we can flood America with competition for Americans to drive down wages," the guy says, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'll do it right away, sir." Because he wants that money so he can or she can run for re-election. We have the best government money can buy. We need a new position in the government, the official auctioneer. I'm personally an advocate for the guy from the Mecum Auto Auction. I think the guy does a pretty good job. But these people are selling our country and the future of our children and their children to the highest bidder. And they're pocketing the money and we're getting shafted. But if you look at the way the immigration laws work, again, it's not about people with brown skin or one religion. No, it's about people who are either citizens or not. And if you're not, then you're an alien. I got so angry when they started this garbage. You can't use the word alien. I started to call them pre-citizens. And it caught on. One day a Border Patrol agent called me, I think from Yuma, and he said, "I got one of them pre-citizens here. Seems like you arrested him a couple of months ago, and you have his immigration file. I need you to send it down to me." And I couldn't stop laughing, and the guys in the office broke up when I told them the story because my concept of the pre-citizen caught on. You see, I like to combat their lies with clarity of language. My degree was in communications, arts, and sciences. I call it my BA and BS. So I've become a pretty good matador. I know how to throw the ball, okay, maybe better than they do, okay? But understand what we're dealing with. So when you say that all aliens are immigrants, which is a pile of warm I don't know what, well, then it's easy to say, well, if you don't want to let these people in, you're anti-immigrant. Well, wait a moment. No, I'm pro-enforcement. And you can look at all the networks, and they'll call people like me anti-immigrants. And they'll talk about Joe Biden being pro-immigrant. I loved how Biden stumbled along and said, "Well, people are saying that the kids are coming because I'm a nice guy." Nice to whom? The human traffickers, the terrorist groups, organized crime, China? Who's he a nice guy to? We cannot solve world poverty and world hunger by inviting the world to the United States. Let's be clear. There's over 7 billion people on the planet. Imagine America is a lifeboat, and the lifeboat is pretty close to capacity, and you're in this lifeboat because the ocean liner that you were enjoying yourself on just sank. And you look into frigid, shark-infested waters, and you see all these people trying to stay afloat, and you feel terrible. You say, "What do I do? What do I do?" If there was one or two, we could probably manage. But if we let 200 people onto this lifeboat, it's going to capsize, and we're all going to wind up in the water. America is not unlike that lifeboat. Or to use another comparison, America is kind of like when you make a party for a bunch of people, right? Whether it's Passover, those of us of the Jewish faith now, in fact, are celebrating Passover, how the Jews escaped from the clutches of the Pharaoh and wound in the desert, and that's why we eat matzah, which is unleavened bread, because they didn't have time to take food with them. And, you know, our great religions all emanate. We all come from the same place, and I know Easter is coming up within the next week, and I wish everybody who celebrates Easter a happy Easter. But imagine you were going to have an Easter dinner or a Passover dinner at your house, and you sit down with your wife and you say, "Well, how many people do you want to invite?" And she comes up with a list of 38 people. And you say, "Wait a minute, where are we going to fit 38 people? Our table in the dining room only seats 10 if we bring in some extra chairs, and yeah, we can put up a card table, but at most we can have 18 people, less than half of the total number you've given me. And so now you got to start taking names off the list. Not because you dislike them, but because you know how big your house is and how big your budget is to be able to afford food to feed everybody who shows up. So you go from 38 to let's say 16, not because you dislike the people that got crossed off the list, but because you are pragmatic and you understand that there's no space for all those people and you don't have the money to feed everybody. Well, that's kind of like the immigration system. And as it is, the U.S. immigration system is the most generous in the world. We admit more than 1 million lawful immigrants every year, except I'm not sure what the numbers were this year because of COVID. But every year we naturalize hundreds of thousands of new citizens, more than the rest of the world combined. Every year we admit tens of millions of temporary visitors, more than the rest of the world combined. So when I hear this garbage about, oh, you're anti-immigrant, no, I want to make sure that we enforce the immigration laws to keep out aliens. And if you go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, it's very clear. Aliens with dangerous communicable diseases or mental illness. Let's remember Ellis Island was a quarantine station. Aliens who are criminals and terrorists and spies, human rights violators, Nazi dirtbag fugitives. We just deported probably the last one. It's amazing how those bums live forever, isn't it? My family was decimated in the Holocaust. I was named for my mother's mother because she could not get out of Poland and was killed by the Nazis. We also want to keep out aliens who, if they worked, would take the jobs of Americans. What's wrong with that? And this isn't about race, it isn't about religion, and it isn't about ethnicity. But it's lie after lie. And I come back to the analogy of the politicians as the magician. The magician gets up in front of this crowded audience, and he introduces his lovely assistant who's running around in a little scanty getup, and she's gorgeous. And he says, I'm going to cut my assistant in half, and everyone gasps. And this poor girl gets into this contraption, then he sticks knives and all kinds of things into it. We've seen this act. Now, everyone knows that if he really hurts this girl, let alone kills her, he's going to go to jail and no one's ever going to work with him again. But his act depends on creating a realistic illusion that he's really taking this poor girl and cutting her to shreds. And he's sticking in one knife and another knife and a big blade and all kinds of... And lo and behold, it looks like he cut her in half. He separates the boxes. There's two separate... And guess what? By the end of the act, she jumps up on... Not a hair on her head was harmed. And everyone is excited because he kept his word. He made it look like he cut her in half without hurting her. What an act. Well, most Americans, truth be known, believe that our borders should be made secure to keep out the bad guys, to keep out foreign workers, to keep out aliens with dangerous diseases. I think we're pretty much in agreement, unless you're crazy. Not because it's my position, but if you look at most surveys, most people would agree with that. Nobody wants to lose their life or their job to somebody who shouldn't be here. They don't want to lose it to anybody, okay? But certainly we have control over who we let in or we're supposed to. That's called sovereignty. The problem is that the people making the bribes, when I say bribe, I keep getting my language confused. The people that write the checks for the campaign contributions, see, I have a problem with these terminology. So they want open borders. They want open borders. It's a delivery system for them. So the politician knows that if I really stop people from coming here from other countries, the people that write the check that I need to be able to win my next election aren't going to write any more checks. I'm going to be fired by the lobbyists. I don't want to be fired by the lobbyists. So just like the magician, the politician creates an elaborate illusion. So it looks like they're doing everything they can to secure the border so that the people that vote for them will say, look at that, my congressman, my congresswoman, my senator, boy, they're on our side. They're doing right by us. I'm going to vote them back in because they're great. Meanwhile, people writing the checks are looking at this and saying, hey, what are you doing? And he said, don't worry about it. They'll still be here tomorrow. And sure enough, they are. And one of the tricks they use is drones on the border. We need a modern immigration system. We don't need walls. We need drones and sensors and technology and computers. That's what we need. Well, there was a survey done a couple of years ago by a member of the Senate. I believe he was diagnosed with cancer. He was retiring. He said, I've had enough. But he said, I'm going to have a study done before I go out the door. And the study was how effective the drones are. Well, folks, you're going to love this. The drones are a fortune. I was told by a Border Patrol pilot that those predators, one predator costs more than four helicopters with agents on board. Think about that. And it takes 17 people, according to this pilot, to run one drone. Certainly not cost effective. But you know what they found? The drones were involved in fewer than one half of 1% of all arrests on the border. Well, if drones are that ineffective, why the hell would you use a drone? Well, we come back to the Magic Act, don't we? It looks good. It sounds military. Drones on the border. I remember Neil Cavuto was all excited about drones on the border when I was on his show. He said, Mike, look at the arrest numbers. The arrests are down. They're sideways. And that's the other thing. Arrests tell us how good a job we're doing. There were more people deported under Obama than Trump. So does that mean that Obama was a better president for immigration? Of course not. Because those numbers, listen, figures don't lie, but liars can figure. If you have zero arrests in a sector in the border, is it good news or bad news? Well, it depends. If the Border Patrol is so effective at sealing off the border and we've created an environment that is so inhospitable to people to violate our laws, so nobody tries to come here, then zero arrest is wonderful news because we're deterring illegal immigration. That should be our objective, to deter it completely. On the other hand, if you have the Border Patrol being run by Joe Biden and Alejandro Mayorkas, who wants open borders, you get zero arrest because they're telling the patrol, don't arrest anybody. So you get diametrically opposed results with the same number, zero arrest. So the number of arrests don't mean anything worth looking at. That's item one. Item two. So you look at this whole thing with the border, and Trump put up the wall. And, of course, it was the Democrats and the Republicans who didn't want to give him the wall. Isn't that right?
Absolutely.
Because they're all bought and paid for. For them, immigration is not a failed system. You know, when I get in front of an audience, I like to ask people, is the immigration system failing? And everyone says, yes. In fact, next week I'll be back in Washington. I'll be addressing a room. Well, it won't be the folks won't be there. We'll be doing it by camera. But it'll be a bunch of senior members of the U.S. Air Force, generals and colonels and so forth. And I always like to ask the military, do you think the immigration system is broken? And hands go up. Yes, of course it's broken. I said, no. And they look at me like I'm nuts. They said, understand, it's not broken because it's become the most effective delivery system in the world. It delivers an unlimited supply of cheap, exploitable labor. And it's not just the illegal aliens, it's the H-1B visas. And one of the biggest proponents of H-1B visas, believe it or not, was a guy by the name of Bob Goodlatte. Bob Goodlatte, if you remember, used to be the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, which oversees immigration, among other things, the FBI and the U.S. Marshals and the prison system and so forth. Bob Goodlatte, before he went to Congress, was a lawyer, an immigration lawyer, and he specialized in H-1B visas. And I had a 30-minute meeting with him in private in his office on Capitol Hill. Just one of his staffers was with him because they always like to have a staffer there so that no one could make any accusations about anything inappropriate. But other than his staffer who sat at the other end of the room, and if you've never been in a congressional office, their offices are laid out pretty much like the Oval Office, except instead of being oval, they're rectangular. So you have the desk by the window, and you have the two couches and the table and so on and so forth. So I'm in this beautiful office, and the more senior you are and the more chairmanships you have, the bigger and better your office is with a really great view. He had this fantastic view, and the office was humongous. You could have played basketball in his office. And I said to him, we need to look at the H-1B visas. And I mentioned how Alan Greenspan had testified for Schumer back in 2009 and said the solution to wage inequality is to make American high-tech workers compete with foreign workers. And through competition, we can get rid of the wage premium because they're making much too much money over what they really should be earning. This is Greenspan testifying before the Senate Immigration Subcommittee for Schumer. And he actually had the chutzpah, as we say in Brooklyn, the temerity, to refer to high-tech workers as the privileged elite. Folks, these are solid middle-class workers. Greenspan, on the other hand, has a mansion in the Hamptons, but we won't talk about that. And so his solution to wage inequality between Americans with skills and those with lesser skills make American high-tech workers compete with workers in the third world. You get rid of their wage premium, and now you've greatly reduced inequality in wages. So in other words, the elevator is not going up, it's going down. We're going to kill the middle class so that the working poor will have nobody to be envious of. This is really called communism. Let's be clear what we're talking about. And we got into an argument over it. He didn't want to discuss it. He said, I don't want to talk about Greenspan. Well, why did you want to talk about his idea? After all, you're a Republican. Schumer had him testify. Schumer is the leader of the Democrat Party in the Senate. I would imagine you would love to take this on. Well, after pushing him and pushing him and pushing him, he finally said, and I told him how my first wife, who had died of cancer decades ago, it was a tragedy. She had cancer, and she was only in her early 30s. Was a brilliant programmer, had her MBA in computer science. She was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate, belonged to the National Math Honor Society, and she had a team of over 30 programmers working for her at her young age because she was so good at what she did. And the workers, with one exception, were all Americans, all had comparable educational credentials. I said, so when you look at Americans like that, why would you want to import an army of foreign workers? He says, well, let me tell you, Mr. Cutler, I know your wife must have been brilliant, but my son really knows his computers, and he'd love to see tens of thousands of brilliant Indian programmers come to America. I said, really? How wonderful for your son that his father can deliver on his wish list. And boy, did Goodlatte get furious. Well, I want you folks, after the program, to go look up Bobby Goodlatte. G-O-O-D-L-A-T-T-E, Bobby Goodlatte, Bob Goodlatte's son. Bobby Goodlatte got his start with Zuckerberg at Facebook, and he's worth quite a bit of money, and he's probably in his 30s right now. It's all about bringing in cheap labor. It's all about displacing American workers. So it's not just the illegal aliens who are treated like crap. It's also the foreign workers who come here on work visas, but they will accept a much smaller wage with much fewer benefits than their American counterparts, and most of them couldn't hold a candle to the American workers. This is about bargain basement workers. This is about lowering the costs of the corporations to increase their profits, especially to the people at the top of the food chain. And so this is what the immigration system delivers. An unlimited supply of cheap, exploitable labor. This isn't about compassion. Don't let anyone kid you. An unlimited supply of foreign tourists. And now we turn to one of my least favorite presidents. This could upset some conservatives out there, but this is America, and we got to call them the way I see them. Actually, I can't think of any favorites prior to maybe Eisenhower or JFK. I liked a lot of the stuff Donald Trump did, but he was his own worst enemy. He had an unlicensed mouth that got him into trouble most of the time, to be honest with you, because this should have been a slam dunk if he had handled it differently, in my view. But he was right on building the wall. He was right on national sovereignty. But if you look at Ronald Reagan, he gave us the visa waiver program. Why? Ronald Reagan gave us the amnesty and didn't hire more immigration agents. Why? He gave us the diversity visa, but it took Herbert Walker Bush to sign that into law. Why did he do that? His idea of deregulation killed a bunch of long-standing airlines, TWA, Pan Am, National Airlines. They went the way of the dodo bird. So understand that when you look at the politicians, let's stop this nonsense about whether there's an R or a D after their name. Let's get rid of that nonsense because this is a disaster, because of globalism, because of campaign contributions. If this is truly a country of the people, by the people, and for the people, as Abe Lincoln so eloquently expressed it, then what we should be looking at in reality is a country that promotes Americans. I'm old enough to remember when Sputnik was launched, Eisenhower didn't frantically run around and say, where do we get workers from what country? He said, we're going to make sure American kids get the best math and science education in the world so America continue to lead, so we can overtake the Russians. Now, we did have German scientists working on our space program, Wernher von Braun and company, and I would argue that they were war criminals. We needed them, but they were our war criminals, okay? He got the highest award from the Nazi regime. He used slave labor to build the V-1 and V-2 rockets. The V-2 went on to become basically the Redstone rocket that was used to launch Alan Shepard and Gus Grissom into a suborbital flight. And prior to them, they launched the primate, Ham, into orbit. I believe he was a rhesus monkey. Not into orbit, but into a suborbital flight, rather. And the V-1 was actually what they call a buzz bomb. It had a ramjet engine that buzzed, and it was kind of like the first cruise missile. It didn't have any real navigation ability. So all the Germans did was aim it in the general direction of England and launched it. And when it ran out of fuel, it would just nose over, crash into the ground, and blow up whatever was there. It was a terror weapon. We have to deal with history the way it is, not romanticize it, not turn it into something it wasn't. When people talk about cancel culture and rewriting history, be very scared. Because if you don't study history, you are doomed to repeat history's terrible mistakes. And lots of people die when we forget the lessons that history is supposed to teach us. So von Braun became everyone's hero because he got us to the moon. He was a brilliant man. But I got to tell you, there's a dark side to the von Braun story. And when he and his fellow rocket scientists from the Harz Mountains in Germany at Peenemünde, where they built the rockets, when they surrendered to the Allies, they brought them to the United States and kept them tightly corralled because our government didn't trust them, because these people basically, for all intents and purposes, some of them at least, were war criminals. Not all of them, perhaps. But these were not nice guys. And, you know, von Braun's excuse was in his book, I Reach for the Stars, I was going to be an aerospace engineer. And as a kid, I thought he was a hero. Well, what he did was heroic, but not so much before he came to America. But the point was, we brought in a bunch of these guys with their rockets, with their tools, with their blueprints, because it jump-started our space. Is, and our leaders back then did the math, and they said, well, we're making a deal with the devil, but what are we going to do? Because if we don't take them, the Russians will, and the Russians got their share of the Nazis also. I remember Bob Hope joking about how he'd just come back from a trip to Russia, and I met Bob Hope at the airport when I was an inspector, really wonderful guy, wanted to buy me lunch because he saw me standing there in my inspector's uniform, and he was making a movie with Eva Marie Saint called Wrong Number, real gentleman. But he joked and said, I went to Russia and I wanted to congratulate them on their success in their space program, but unfortunately I don't speak German. Well, I gotta tell you, Mr. Hope, and I remember that line. But he could have said the same about our space program. So I have no problem with bringing in a limited number of high-tech workers to help America succeed. I think that's great. But when you bring in hundreds of thousands of foreign workers, by definition, these aren't exceptional. The only thing exceptional about them is they will work for exceptionally low wages under exceptionally adverse conditions. So this, again, is part of the delivery system. Flood America with cheap labor, drive down wages. We also are flooding America and enticing them through what they called comprehensive immigration reform, not to get them out of the shadows. That's baloney. You want to get people out of the shadows, you hire agents. They never hire agents. That's the whole trick to the game. Pass new laws, make sure there's no one to enforce the laws, and that's the game. Failure by design. The trick with comprehensive reform is it would motivate the aliens not to come out of the shadows, but to go into the waiting rooms of law firms. So Bob Goodlatte was an immigration lawyer. He's happy. Today, the Democrats control the Congress. There's a young lady who is Zoe Lofgren, who now is the chairperson of the House Immigration Subcommittee. Zoe Lofgren is also an immigration lawyer. So you have a conflict of interest. If we have this big amnesty program, we will have a limitless supply of clients for immigration law firms, and they love it. Now, who else is feeding at this very lucrative and deep trough? Well, the labor unions, not all, some of them will not allow illegal aliens to join them. The Carpenters Union in New York limit how many people can join the union, and they have an apprenticeship program because they know if they have too many people who are qualified carpenters, people will lose their jobs and they'll be down with pressure on wages. Wages, like any other commodity, supply and demand. So people wait online when they open up membership in the Carpenters Union, because people know if they can become a carpenter, they can make a good buck. And by the way, who's to say that you have to go to college? Tradesmen are very important. Europe understands this. My dad was a construction worker, but he was a tradesman. He was a plumber. His apprenticeship program was 5 years. It's like going to college. There's nothing dishonorable about doing a job where you get dirt under your fingernails. Two of my boys are mechanical engineers. They graduated with honors. But you know what? They get dirt under their fingernails. Does that mean they're failures? I consider them highly successful. But please understand what we're talking about. We have this foolishness in this country that, you know, if you get dirt under your nails, you're not a success. Sure thing. So now we're talking about the labor unions that are willing to enroll illegal aliens. And why are they willing to enroll the illegal aliens? Because a body is a body is a body. Everybody who joins a labor union pays dues. That means more money. Everybody who joins the labor union swells their numbers, which gives them more leverage and more political clout. So labor unions love open borders, for the most part, a couple of exceptions. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, all about businesses which want the cheap labor. They're thrilled. Banks are thrilled. Because if you bring in foreign workers, they're going to send money home. If they send money home, they're going to go to a wire remitter, whether it's Western Union or a local bank, and they're going to wire the money, and the bank gets a service fee for wiring the money. So they are the silent partner, whether the money is because some surgeon came to America and saved the child's life, or the money came from a woman who's forced into prostitution, or the money comes from a drug cartel that just moved 3 kilos of heroin. They move the money, they get their fee, and they're happy. So everyone's making out. Then there are religious organizations, and they're thrilled, because lately not as many people perhaps are going to church or synagogue or wherever. We want to fill the pews, or we want to fill the classrooms, because then we can charge the students to go to our schools, but we don't have as many as we used to have. We're losing money. No problem. Bring in the immigrants. One way or the other, maybe they'll send their kids to your school. And then the religious organizations and the non-government organizations who deal with the refugees, they call themselves nonprofits, but maybe not so much when you see what their CEOs earn. It's very profitable for them. So they're thrilled to see refugees come in, because every time they see a refugee, they hear cha-ching. How many people are feeding at the trough? I don't know how they could all eat at the same time. They need sharp elbows, wouldn't they? But guess who's getting screwed, folks? Americans and the United States of America. And when you have Biden pouring people across the border, I started out by saying that I see a violation of the Constitution. Let's look at Article 4, Section 4. Which promises each state a Republican form of government and protection against domestic violence and invasion, by the way, invasion and domestic violence. I don't know about you, but if you have hundreds of thousands of people flowing across our border in a chaotic situation, I kind of think it qualifies as an invasion, but maybe that's me. So when you have people flooding into the country, no one's paying attention to the fact that once they're here, no one's going to look for them, because Joe Biden established a policy with his magic pen, and he told the ICE agents, the immigration agents, you will only arrest an illegal alien if you have an administrative warrant, and the warrant was issued because the guy has serious convictions for crimes. Otherwise, don't you dare think of arresting those people. That's not what the law says. I would go out and look to arrest somebody. I had a warrant. The guy maybe shot a police officer or sold drugs, or he was previously deported. And you knock on the door, and criminals move frequently. They don't want grass growing under their feet, because if people know where they are, they're easy to catch. They're on the move. That's one hell of a way to live, I got to tell you. I don't know why anybody would do this to themselves, but one of my partners used to look at the situations and would say, boy, I don't know what the color of the sky is in this guy's world, but it sure as hell isn't blue. So these guys move frequently. So you have a lead that this guy, Charlie Jones, wanted for murder in England, is living at 123 Main Street. To knock on the door, Charlie's not there, but Bob is there, and Bob is from Ireland, and Bob looks at you and he says, top of the morning, what can I do for you? I said, oh, top of the morning to you. I'm with immigration. Where's your passport? Oops. That's that oops moment, you know? And we used to put the handcuffs on the guy, put him in the back of the car. He'd go before an immigration judge the next day because he was an overstay. He violated his visa. Maybe he was working without permission. And the judge would say, okay, it's clear cut. You came on a tourist visa. You're working without permission. You need to go back to your home country. No one looked at it as the death penalty. Today, when you say we're going to send people back to their home country, oh, my God, you're going to kill these poor people. No, we're sending them back to their country. When the store closes, the people tell you, you must leave the store. Why? I like it here. It's warm. Sorry, you don't live here. You just came in to buy some clothing, but the store is closed. You need to leave. And they leave. And think about stores. Prior to COVID, they depended on people coming into the store to make purchases. If they didn't come in to make purchases, they would go out of business. They want customers. So they try to make the store as inviting as possible, and they spend a lot of money on fancy displays. In fact, I had a tenant who used to live downstairs. We became very good friends. He just retired, but he used to do the displays in the department stores. It's really an art. So that people come in and they see the clothing or they see the electronics equipment, and it was arranged in such a way where it made people want to come over and check it out. That's a real talent. You have to be very, very talented, and a lot of creativity is involved and so forth. And in fact, my daughter-in-law was involved with something very similar not long ago, doing these displays in various stores, because you want the store to be inviting. You want people to come in, and more importantly, you want them to spend your money. But on the other hand, when someone steals from the store, we don't call that a cashless purchase, do we? You know?
No.
And that's why you go into the stores, and what do you see? You have some department store detectives, you know, they're there to make sure that they're watching what's happening. They have closed-circuit television. And if you're getting something expensive, like maybe a $250 electric razor, it's not just sitting on a counter. They put it in a locked cabinet. So you have to get a salesperson who unlocks the cabinet and takes the shaver to the cash register where you pay for it, because they want to make sure that you don't forget to pay on your way out the door. That's what immigration is like. We want people to come to America. We want tourism. It's a big industry. Lots of businesses depend on tourism. But we don't want people who will come to America and do harm, take jobs that they shouldn't be taking, commit crimes, and so forth. So it's not anti-immigrant to say, look, we have rules. And under the rules, you can't work under certain visas. Under the rules, you're limited as to how long you can stay here and so forth. And under the rules, if you commit crimes, then we're going to deport you when you come out of jail. That's the rules. When you go into a restaurant, they have rules, don't they? If you're barefoot or not wearing a shirt, we refuse to serve you. Some upscale restaurants require that you wear a tie and jacket. I've been to some restaurants where I hadn't planned to go in, and they will lend you a jacket so that you don't upset the decorum of the establishment. Those are the rules they establish. You're entitled to do that. The United States has rules, and it's not about, again, race or religion. It's about not working if you're not permitted to, not committing crimes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the MAGIC Act is that the politicians use deceptive language to convince people that you have to be a xenophobe and a horrible person if you really want people to leave the United States or you don't want to let them in. Well, I'll tell you what, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And I remember when Lou Barletta was a member of Congress, and I helped Lou when he was the mayor of Hazleton. He became a member of the House, I believe it was the Homeland Security Committee, and we stayed in touch over the years. And I remember at one hearing, I was watching the hearing, and it made me laugh because he quoted me during the hearing. He said, you know, it's been said that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. But then again, he said, my good friend Mike Cutler, former senior special agent with the INS, might say that where terrorists are concerned, an ounce of prevention is worth a ton of cure. And I had a good laugh watching Lou live because the hearing was streaming live. But that's right. So here we have a situation on the border where we see all these kids. And it's infuriating to me that Joe Biden is taking a page out of the communist Chinese playbook. We're not going to let you see how we're holding these people. Our criminal justice system is supposed to be open and transparent. There's a murder trial underway right now in Minnesota for the cop who killed George Floyd. It's being televised. You don't want secret trials in America because then you have the secret police. Then people disappear. Oh, Mike Cutler is a problem. We'll disappear him. No, our criminal justice system is open to the public. Why is it open to the public? So that people see exactly how we do business. When you look at the jails, the American people have a right to know how aliens are being maintained in custody. In fact, I was a witness at a hearing about that. And the statement that I made, of course, we didn't have the numbers that we have now. And this started with Mr. Obama with the unaccompanied minors, and everything went downhill quickly after that. But Obama started this, and we wound up with MS-13 flooding America. But what I had said was this. When people apply for political asylum, they need to be held until we can verify that they're not terrorists or criminals. The 9/11 Commission warned about that. And earlier I had mentioned my first wife, who died of cancer. Her parents suffered through the Holocaust. Her mother was in a concentration camp. Her father evaded the Nazis by living in little holes in the ground that they dug into the ground every night. His brother was shot. His family was obliterated. They suffered through the Holocaust, okay? And so we need to make distinctions about certain things. When I hear people saying, well, you know, they're treating the immigrants like, or the ICE agents treat the people like Nazis, you can imagine what that does. But the whole thing is they had secret police in Germany and in Poland throughout the Holocaust. We don't want secret police. We don't want that kind of situation. But when my wife's family, my first wife's family, were going to come to America when they were liberated. They didn't come to America right away. They were forced to stay in Italy in a refugee camp for several years. Why were they there? It was almost like the Remain in Mexico program that Trump implemented in Mexico. Nothing new under the sun, folks. They stayed in Italy because Italy agreed. They said, we're not far from Germany, so you can bring these people here. And we'll build, you know, a tent city or however they had put them up. I'm not really sure what the circumstances were. But I remember that my in-laws always had very warm thoughts about the Italians. She absolutely loved the Italian people. She said they treated them with compassion and they treated them with dignity and respect. And she loved Italians for that reason, and which was wonderful. But they were not allowed to come here until State Department did an in-depth investigation, which took years. Years. And then finally they came here. So one day at the dinner table, I said to her, didn't you resent having to stay in Italy when you really wanted to come to America? And she said, no. I said, why not? Because we felt safe that they weren't going to allow the Nazis to come with us. And of course, that did not happen. There were Nazis who came, but a lot of Nazis were also prevented from coming. They didn't want to be with those people who did such damage to them, to their families, and killed so many. And you could understand it. So the fact that we were being careful and meticulous in screening the people before they were allowed to come to America as refugees encouraged them and gave them a sense of security and well-being. Think about that. Donald Trump said, if you're going to come to America and claim political asylum, under the law, by the way, international law, if you escape from your country where you're at risk, the first country you go to is where you're supposed to apply for asylum. And the only way you can apply for asylum is if you have what you claim to be a well-founded fear, a credible fear that you face persecution or worse because of race, religion, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or political ideology. Period. There's nothing there that says, I live in a country where they only pay, you know, 50 cents an hour, and I want to make more money. That's not a political refugee. That's an economic refugee, and there is no such thing. So let's be clear about that. Let's be clear about that. So when you see the poor people, and when they interview them standing in these long lines, the caravans, why do you want to come to America? I want a good job. You know what? That person is not qualified for political asylum. He's an economic refugee at best. And there is no such thing as an economic refugee. I hope I'm making a point that's sinking in, folks, because this is critical. Over half the world lives below the poverty line. that means we should admit 3.5 billion people. Let's see how that works out. So when they stand there and say, I want to come to America, bingo, you're done. Most of the people who apply for asylum, by the way, do not get asylum because they don't qualify under the law for that reason. So when you flood the system with all these people who are claiming political asylum, they file applications. Every application has to be investigated. If you investigate those applications, you're taking resources and stretching it to the point where we're not really able to screen the people, especially when you let them come into the country and then say, okay, and now we'll see what the story is if we should let you stay here. They're here. Who's going to make them leave? And Biden has made it clear that unless the person has convictions for serious felonies, you can't arrest them anyway, and even if you wanted to arrest them, how many agents do we have? ICE has about 6,000 agents, and most of the time they're not even doing immigration work, and under Biden, they're almost doing zero immigration work. So we're admitting hundreds of thousands every month. Who's going to look for hundreds of thousands of people? 20 agents, 50 agents, 100? I mean, it's ridiculous. Once they're here, and they're here forever. The only reason they're here temporarily is because no one lives forever, okay? So this notion, we're going to let them in and then we'll process them, they're here. And in fact, the system is now so overwhelmed, think about this, they're not even getting dates to go before an immigration judge. So I don't even know if an immigration agent encounters these people, what you would even do with them. You can't argue that they entered without inspection because the Border Patrol said, yeah, you can go. Well, was that really an inspection? Are they here legally? Are they here illegally? God only knows. They've turned immigration law on its tail and made it irrelevant. I don't know why anybody should bother getting a visa any longer because it doesn't matter how you come here. It used to be when I was a new agent, if you encountered somebody and say, how did you come to America? And the guy said, well, I ran the border. You put handcuffs on them. You ran the border, you violated our borders, you're under arrest. How did you come here? Oh, here's my passport. You look at the passport, the guy came in a year ago, he was allowed to stay 90 days perhaps, and you say, wait a minute, this is March, you were supposed to leave last September. Oh, I'm sorry, I got lost. Yeah, I'm sorry, but we found you, you're not lost anymore. And they got handcuffed. What do you do with these guys? I remember one day we went into a gas station looking for this kid who came here from Greece on a tourist visa. I kid you not. I go to the gas station because we had a tip. I think he was messing around with somebody's girlfriend or something. So to get even, we used to get a lot of those tips, right? You know, Demetrius is messing with my woman. Okay, sure thing. So we go looking for this guy. We go into a gas station. I want you to picture the scene because this is kind of funny, James. I got a guy on a crawler. You know what the crawler is? A little flatboard, a little wheel, right, and it's tied under a car. So here I see these construction boots sticking out from under a car with these two legs. And I kind of tap him with my foot on his foot, and he rolls out from under the car. This guy is covered in grease from head to toe, okay? I mean, he is I couldn't tell if he was black, white, or purple because he was covered head to foot in grease. His hair was even greasy. And the name on these coveralls, he's wearing mechanic coveralls, said Demetrius. Now I'm looking for Demetrius. And I look at the guy. I said, how are you doing? He goes, okay. He said, what do you want? I said, I'm with immigration. He says, I'm not working here. I want you to think about that.
I know what you thought, but I'm not working here.
Okay. It was one of the funniest moments. And his boss is looking at him, and he's looking at me, and he just put his head in his hands, and he just started to laugh, and he couldn't stop laughing. He said, oh, my God. Now, this was in the days before you would punish someone for knowingly hiring an illegal alien. I don't think this boss even knew. And everybody in the gas station is hysterical. And I said to the boss, give me a time card. Give me whatever paperwork you have. I'm going to use it as evidence because I'm going to bring this guy to an immigration judge. And we cleaned him up as best we could. We threw him in the back of my car in handcuffs. He saw the judge, and by the end of the week, he was back in Greece. We didn't punish him. The courts have ruled deportation is not punishment. We have an administrative right to control who comes into the country. You get on an airplane. You don't wear a mask. They're going to kick you off the airplane. You're violating the terms of your admission onto the airplane, aren't you? you see? And so countries have that right. He took a job that an American should have had. And I don't know if I ever mentioned that on your program, but this is, again, before it was a crime for knowingly hiring illegal aliens. When I worked the 4 to midnight shift, there was a gas station behind Kennedy Airport on Rockaway Turnpike. And every time I went into that gas station, there would be illegal aliens working there, working the 4 to midnight shift or the midnight to 8 a.m. shift. And they were either from Pakistan or they were from, you know, pick a country, Jamaica, from Panama. It didn't matter. It was a League of Nations. He was just never hired American kids. And I would arrest these aliens. And it was late at night. We got stuck doing paperwork, till the sun came up. But I did it because it angered me. And we would call the owner up, and I would say, listen, it looks like you got two guys working here, and they're here illegally. We just arrested them, and we're going to wait for you for 15 minutes, and after that, we're walking out of here, and the guy doesn't have the keys, so you better come and lock up your gas station, because if you're not here in 15 minutes, I don't know what's going to happen to your property. So this guy used to come running down to the gas station in his bathrobe with a bag with his clothing in it. I kid you not. Could you picture the scene? And he'd be all worked up, and he'd say, I was trying to get some sleep. I said, yeah, hire Americans, hire people who have green cards, hire people who are entitled to work in the United States, and you can sleep. But if you're going to keep doing this, I'm going to keep waking you up, and you're going to keep working in your own gas station. This went on for about a year. This guy was a hard-headed character, and I must have done this about a half dozen times in the course of a year. Finally, one day, I go into the gas station, and there were two black kids working in the gas station that I just walked in. I said, what country are you from? And they started to laugh. They were from Brooklyn, and they were American black kids. And they were both going to college, and they said that because of that job, they were able to pay their expenses while they were going to school. What do you think of that? How cool was that? And I said,
yeah, that's,
I'm glad it's
that's
working
the thing,
out.
Mike. The suffering that nobody knows about. I mean, we see the tragedy at the border, and they holler about it, and they make all this noise. But it's not just American citizens who are suffering. It's these folks that are being exploited,
absolutely,
really by our country and their own.
Absolutely. And it angered me. And when I pulled into the gas station, the guy looked at me and he said to me, you're those two immigration agents that kept getting our boss out of bed in the middle of the night, aren't you? I said, yes, I am. And they shook my hand. They said, can we get you guys a cup of coffee? I said, absolutely not. They said, well, we want to do something for you. I said, you want to do something for me? I said, yeah. I said, graduate with honors and get a good job. You know, they hugged us. And it choked me up. But if that's what this is about, tired of Americans having their futures stolen by greedy bastards who are hiring people they shouldn't be hiring. And we used to raid factories and come back the next day and see a long line of people authorized to work in the United States, including Americans, waiting online for a job. How cool is that? So when I hear this garbage about the work Americans won't do, and then you always see the story, oh, when Donald Trump was the president, he was tightening up on these factories or these restaurants, and so we had to pay an extra $2 an hour to some American kid. That's outrageous. It's hurting my business. You're complaining that an American kid was taking the job instead of an illegal alien you could treat like crap? Really? Look, there's nothing compassionate about this, and the American people have been bamboozled. But here's what's even worse. I wrote an article, and I write for two websites. I've been writing for years. I'm very proud of my relationship with Front Page Magazine. It's published by the David Horowitz Freedom Center, and David does a phenomenal job. And,
yeah,
and
it's
I
a terrific
a lot of
place.
Writing. It is. And I'm also now writing for the American Conservative. Very happy to do articles for them. And my latest article for the American Conservative is about how Biden has amped up the immigration delivery system, delivering just what we discussed. And if you go to Front Page Magazine, I talked about how it's a heart-wrenching thing to see these kids being held in cages. You couldn't put livestock in those cages without getting into trouble with a government agency. Seriously. Those pictures finally came out. This isn't America. way we conceal how we keep people in jail. That's what you expect from a dictatorship. Maybe that's the reason that Nancy wants to have all those barricades to protect the Capitol, because they know they're going to continue to do some pretty vile and disgusting things. Maybe they're worried that Americans will come down to Washington and demand this nonsense come to a screeching halt. That's why I really think you still have the soldiers there and the barbed wire and all this other crap. Because what they're doing is as anti-American as it gets. In full disclosure, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. They are not Democrats. Bernie Sanders in 2006 delivered an impassioned speech where he said that anybody who hires illegal aliens should be prosecuted because you're taking jobs from Americans and destroying wages for Americans. Where did Bernie go? Okay? So you look at this whole big mess that we're dealing with, and you say to yourself, what are we doing? Because now you look at these kids in cages, and this is now the focus of immigration on the border. We're leaving out a bigger part of the story. I don't know how many of the people in the audience, and again, it's important to study history, know anything about Operation Fortitude. I'm sure everybody knows about Operation Overlord. Maybe you don't know what is Overlord because that was the official code name, but it's probably better known as D-Day, when the Allies stormed the beaches at Normandy. Now, who do you give credit, by the way, to that? Well, I would give credit to both the brilliant generals who came up with the plans and certainly to those valiant soldiers, many of whom laid down their lives, and those who didn't die came home grievously injured. They gave up their health. They gave up body parts for us. And now we're going to talk about America as this despicable country? You know, I'm going to take us on a little side excursion real quickly, but I made this point when I was on with Dr. Dave Janda. He's an orthopedic surgeon who does a radio show out of Michigan called Operation Freedom. And America has done some really dumb and vile and reprehensible things in its history. So do people, by the way. So do people. But I'll put America's reputation up against any other country in history. And I think we come out pretty good. Damn good, in fact. Did we have slavery? Absolutely. Was it right? Of course it wasn't right. How could you even ask that question? I remember Sheila Jackson Lee, and I testified to Sheila a couple times, introduced me to John Lewis. John Lewis, if you remember, died, I believe, a year ago. He got his start as an iconic civil rights fighter. He was injured. He was beaten. And we were talking about civil rights. And we were talking about slavery. And I said, you know, I'm a Jew, and my people were enslaved before your people were enslaved. And my people, the Jews, were enslaved afterwards, too, which is what Hitler did during the Second World War with the forced labor camps and the concentration camps. And it took John Lewis a moment and kind of clicked, and Sheila Jackson Lee. And I said, we know that outfits like the KKK hate blacks. We know it. But I think they hate me more than they hate you, Congressman Lewis. And he said, why? I said, well, you're clearly black, but no one can look at me and know who I am. So the bigots look at Mike Cutler as an undercover black. He's a Jew, but you can't tell just by looking at him. So both he and Sheila Jackson Lee couldn't stop laughing. But sometimes humor gives you an opportunity to make a point. I wish Donald Trump had learned that. I wish Donald Trump had learned that. But in any event, we have the situation now with Operation Overlord, and the Allied soldiers and the generals said, you know, the Nazis have such fortifications at Normandy, we probably won't be able to get past those fortifications unless we can somehow get the Germans to divide their resources. So they came up with this brilliant idea. It became known as Operation Fortitude, also known as the Calais Deception. I hope everybody will check it out. In fact, if you go to my article at Front Page Magazine, frontpagemag.com, and you click on my latest article, I give you a link about Operation Fortitude. It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. The Allies took the dead body of a soldier, dressed him up in a suit, handcuffed a briefcase to his wrist that a courier might carry, filled it with documents that were stamped top secret, but they were fake. It was all about the invasion coming through Port de Calais, not through Normandy. And they took this poor guy's body, put him into a submarine, and shot his body towards the beach out of a torpedo tube, knowing that he would wash up on shore the following morning when the tide would come in. And sure enough, the Nazis found the body, they found the briefcase, and they thought that they had stumbled upon an intelligence treasure trove. Now, to back that up, because our guys weren't done yet, they had a bunch of inflatable tanks and jeeps and trucks constructed. So from the air, they looked like the real article. And at night, because they didn't have night vision back then, we didn't have satellites back then, neither did the Nazis, at night they would have soldiers go out onto the beach with tank treads and tires and create the treads, because if we just plunked the tank down in the middle of the sand, it would look like someone just plunked something down. It wouldn't make sense. So they created tank tracks all over the sand. So it looked as though all these tanks and trucks and jeeps were being driven there as a staging area to attack at Calais. How brilliant is that? They put General Patton in charge of it because he had fallen out of favor with General Eisenhower, and so they wanted to put him somewhere where, you know, they wouldn't have to deal with him. So they put him in charge of an invisible army that didn't exist. And the Germans fell for it. And they split their forces in half. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why D-Day worked. Think about that. Now, probably half of all Border Patrol agents, they're not going to Calais, but they're doing nursemaid service for the kids. They're not on the line. They're not watching the border. God only knows who's coming across that border. And Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are okay with it, and neither of them will go down to look at the border with their own eyes. And I wrote an article, pardon me, about Alejandro Mayorkas, the head of the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I've come to call it. He was investigated by the Office of Inspector General back when he worked under the Obama administration as the head of Citizenship and Immigration Services. And you never see much about Citizenship and Immigration Services because it's not a visual thing to see. You know, when I was on Lou Dobbs, he loved images of illegal aliens jumping the border. We always see those pictures. Look, they're running over the border. They're charging the border. Or they even like ICE agents in raid jackets crashing through doors to make arrests. It's visual. It's exciting. What does an adjudicator do? Well, I spent the years in the adjudications office. You sit there and you adjudicate applications, you know. And there's so many, you're probably not even talking to too many people. You're just sitting there, you know, with your approval stamp and your pen and your stapler. And that's not visually exciting. That's like watching weeds grow. All right, they want drama. This is TV, man. We need images. There's this guy sitting there with a stapler and a stamp going cha-chung, cha-chung, cha-chung. That's not exciting. So no one pays attention. So I'm going to ask you a question. I want your audience to think about it. Let's say Biden finally agrees to finish the wall, and not only does he finish the wall, but he puts, you know, barbed wire at the very top, and he runs 100,000 volts of electricity through it. And I'm going to tell you, I could put something in your pocket and you could walk right past that wall as though it wasn't there. What could I put in your pocket that weighs less than 5 ounces, and with this in your pocket, you can get through that wall? Any ideas?
No, not the first one.
Yeah, a green card.
Well, I was going to say an ID card of some kind. Yeah, I guess a green card would be it.
Yep. That's how important this operation at Citizenship and Immigration Services is. Ironically, my very first hearing was back in May 20th, 97, 4.5 years before 9/11, and the topic was immigration fraud and visa fraud because of two terror attacks that had been carried out in the United States back in 1993. In January 93, a Pakistani by the name of Amil Kansi shows up in the parking lot of the Central Intelligence Agency in Virginia in a courier van. He had applied for asylum. He bought into this courier service. The van had a parking permit, so they were allowed to pull into the parking lot at the CIA so they could deliver packages or pick up packages. Well, that morning, he pulled in, but it wasn't about packages because when he jumped out of the van, he had an AK-47 with him. He opened fire and killed two CIA officers, wounded three others, and fled the country. he was dragged back here by our guys, and he was put on trial, found guilty, and executed, but the dead remained dead, the injured remained injured. 1 month after the attack at the CIA, we have the bombing at the Trade Center. 6 dead, over 1,000 injured, $500 million in damages. They almost brought the tower down sideways. The terrorist's stated goal was to kill 250,000 people. 250,000 people, a handful of people. This is asymmetrical warfare. It's terrorism. Now, the guy that drove the van was an illegal alien. He violated his visa. The guy who rented the van had also violated his visa. Two illegal aliens moved that bomb in the van into the garage of the Trade Center and set it off. The explosives were gathered by an alien who became a chemist at Allied Chemical or Allied Signal. I forgot what it was. And in fact, Dianne Feinstein, the senator from California, talked about that. We've actually trained terrorists in the United States in chemistry and physics and biology. And she said that needs to stop. This was at a hearing that was held on February the 24th, 1998, 2 days short of the 5th anniversary of the bombing of the Trade Center. She said we ought to end the visa waiver program. Perhaps we shouldn't be giving visas to aliens who come from countries that sponsor terrorism. We certainly need to reconsider whether or not we give these people this kind of training. We're teaching our enemies how to make weapons of mass destruction they could use to attack us. And nobody fainted and nobody screamed. I used to speak to Diane's people all the time. And then something just flipped. Between the Chamber of Commerce and the decision Citizens United, which means unlimited amounts of money can be pumped into political campaigns, everything came unglued. So understand what we're talking about. You have two illegal aliens renting and driving a truck, and now we give illegal aliens driver's licenses. So you have all these concrete barriers and all these grates that pop out of the sidewalk or out of the gutter to shred tires if they don't want a car to go down that street. To protect against what? Car bombs and truck bombs. Well, okay, I agree with that. That makes sense. But we have no idea who's getting behind the wheel of the vehicles. How insane is this? And if you say anything about it, you are labeled a xenophobe, a racist, a bigot, or a nativist. Well, I am a nativist, I admit. I believe that Americans of every race, every religion, every ethnicity, Americans should be the first of the government of the United States of America. And if that makes me a nativist, give me a double helping. You would think that a country's loyalty should be to its citizens, just as my loyalty is to my children, you see. So they use this language to intimidate you. In fact, when I testified the first time before the Senate Judiciary Committee, the late Arlen Specter was there. He was officiating. And the way he called on me before everybody was even seated made it clear he wasn't happy I was there, but they knew they needed to call me as a witness, I guess to give at least the illusion of balance. Yeah, sure thing. Dream on. But he introduced me by saying there are some people who suffer from exophobia. Exophobia. Is that the fear of the letter X? I almost started laughing when he said it, and then he corrected himself and said xenophobia. I said, my God, if this guy chairs the subcommittee, can you make this up? Exophobia.
Oh,
true story.
I
had a videotape of all these moments.
You mentioned the barriers for the truck bombs and the car bombs and you know the fact that people are just handing driver's license to illegal aliens all over the country. You know, we have a vast interstate trucking industry throughout this country that who would know out there right now while you and I are talking, for all intents and purposes, who knows how many 53-foot trailers are filled with ammonium nitrate that's been soaked in kerosene.
Yep. And by the way, they're going to start running those trucks with computers and no driver on board. What if someone hacks into one of those computers? We are crazy.
And they will. And they will.
Let me tell you, we are crazy. We've lost our collective minds. We've lost our collective minds. I mean, what should be simple, I love my car. I drive an Acura MDX, and we're going to lease another one. It's more economic. And by that's a measure of how many people are really in economic hardship, but we don't buy cars anymore. We lease them. But something as simple as the handbrake. When I was a kid, I had sports cars. You pulled on a handle, the handle pulled on a cable, and the cable applied the brake. Oh, no. Not the new cars. A computer does that. Why do we need a computer to do everything for us? You know? What about the principle that the simplest is better, Occam's razor? So we create these Rube Goldberg setups. It's bizarre. And so nothing that we're doing is making any logical sense anymore. We are incapable of being rational. I'm convinced of it. And so you have people that all they care about is the bottom line and not where this is going to take America. When we were kids, Eisenhower, when Sputnik was launched, I mentioned it, said, you know, we're going to educate American children. Companies looked at American kids as their future employees. So you had the General Electric College Bowl. They went there a few times because this was kind of like Jeopardy, but for college kids, because they wanted to encourage kids to attain academic success. Now in New York, they're allowing people to graduate from high school even if they flunked the Regents exam. So what's the point to an education? Why don't we just call it what they are, attendance certificates? We've lost our minds. And when you hire more and more aliens to do the jobs, what you wind up with is more and more people who are saying, why would I bother going to college? Why would I go to college? Because they're going to give these jobs to somebody from India or some other country. We've allowed people to work in these companies who are here from China. Then they commit espionage. Chinese espionage is so prevalent that the intelligence service has a term for Chinese espionage. You know what the term is? Chinese takeout. Chinese takeout. So we've educated our enemies. We put them through computer school. Donald Trump ended that. We allowed them to work in the aerospace industry. They took the secrets and brought it to China. Donald Trump stopped that. So for all the hatred that Donald Trump got, and I didn't like some of the stuff he did or some of the things he said, you know, I remember I have a good friend who is a retired two-star general. And when I was addressing a bunch of Air Force generals, I wouldn't give up his name, and I'm not going to give up his name here either. But because I know several generals since I've had the opportunity to meet with some incredible Americans. It makes me very proud to be able to call them friends. But I'm convinced that my buddy is such a supporter of Donald Trump that if Donald Trump walked into his house and relieved himself on his dining room table, he'd probably call it a centerpiece and have it laminated. I'm not like that, okay? I don't think Donald Trump was anywhere near infallible, okay? I wish he had asked Joe Biden if he bothered to read the 9/11 Commission report, because that would open up a whole bunch of questions that would lay bare for the American people a true understanding of how dangerous this all is. When you have people wandering around the country, you don't know who the hell they are, they have driver's licenses. And by the way, folks, I know you might be in West Virginia, or you might be in Omaha, Nebraska, or you might be living in Utah, and you think, well, I don't have that problem because they don't give out driver's licenses to illegal aliens here. Yeah, you're still at risk. Because with my New York license, I can go to any place in the United States and rent a car, and so can terrorists. So when Governor Cuomo, boy, don't you love how he's been doing lately?
Oh,
you know,
gosh.
Be nice to the people, the little guys you meet on the way up, because you're going to meet them again on the way down. And I'm actually thinking of sending him a letter telling him that falling doesn't hurt a little bit. It's only the sudden stop. But Cuomo is the guy that gives driver's licenses to illegal aliens and won't share that information with the Department of Homeland Security. Think about that. So if you run a plate and you're an immigration agent or a border patrol agent, or you're sitting there on the border with Customs and Border Patrol, it comes back inaccessible. Inaccessible. Send us a subpoena, and when we get around to it in a couple of weeks, maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll do it for you. Maybe not. We'll see. Wow. And this is endangering everybody across the country. And the courts have gone off the rail. Oh, yeah, they can do that. You can't defund sanctuary cities. Really? Why do you think El Chapo Guzman, one of the most pernicious and violent drug traffickers of all time from Mexico, set up shop in New York City? Because it's a sanctuary city. That's why he was put on trial in Brooklyn, New York. I mean, this isn't just a border issue. Most people look at the thing, the kids in the cages, they go, oh, well, I don't live in Texas. I don't live in Arizona. Not my problem. Where do you think these folks are going when they get out? They're heading to every state in the country. And we're a country of 50 border states. And so we don't even know who's here. And let's put this in proper perspective. And I've mentioned it before, and I'm going to mention it again. Joe Biden's amnesty. He says, well, we're just going to take care of 11 million. And people say, well, what the hell? We have 330 million. We could deal with that. And they're here. That was Bob Goodlatte's argument. They're here. No, they're not here. Because they can bring in all their minor children and their spouses. And even Yale University said there's probably over 22 million illegal aliens. I would argue maybe 30 million. But let's go with 25 million because that number from Yale was back in 2018. So for the sake of round numbers, and I'm being a wild-eyed optimist, let's say there's 25 million illegals. That means, number one, there will be no interviews. There will be no field investigations. And having been an adjudicator, I know this backwards, forwards, sideways, and upside down. It takes minutes to approve an application and days or longer to deny one. And if you have a backlog of 25 million, you're going to be doing everything in your power to move that line. You're going to be Lucy at the Bonbon Factory on steroids. That means no interviews, no field investigations. Immigration fraud will go through the roof. And the 9/11 Commission warned about immigration fraud. Number one threat. Number one threat. So that's item number one. Number two, they can bring in all their kids. And with a guy like Mayorkas, who was investigated by the Office of Inspector General, allegedly for politicizing the way that he ordered his people to adjudicate applications for the EB-5 treaty investor visa, which had been used by terrorists in the past, by people from Iran and other countries, believe it or not. And the OIG, Office of Inspector General, the Internal Affairs, found that it appeared that he was making decisions based on politics, specifically on behalf of Terry McAuliffe and companies that were involved with McAuliffe and Hillary Clinton and so forth. And I can tell you that he was ordering the adjudicators to approve applications no matter what. His advice or orders, actually, not advice, but it was ironclad order, get to yes, you will approve them. So immigration fraud, huge problem. Huge problem. So let's put that in perspective. 19 terrorists on 9/11 killed more people than we lost to the entire Japanese fleet at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. How sobering is that thought? And the death count from 9/11 continues as first responders, for the most part, are still dying from diseases that are the result of their exposure to the toxins when the towers collapsed. So you have people running immigration who don't give a rat's tale about America or immigration. And no one is getting up there. And then you have the politicians on our side saying, well, you know, they've caught people on the Mexican border who are on the terror watch list. And I got to tell you something. That statement is good news and bad news. I'm glad they're making the point, but do you think that everybody who's a terrorist is on the watch list? Most of them aren't. And we know who they've caught. We don't know who they didn't. So, I go back to that statement. 19 hijackers on 9/11 killed more people than we lost to the Japanese fleet at Pearl Harbor. Now, I don't know how many aliens were involved in the 93 bombing of the Trade Center, but I'm quite certain it was a smaller number than the 19 who carried out the 9/11 attack. According to some engineers and investigators I spoke with who investigated the bombing, they might well have killed 250,000 if the tower came down, and it almost did. If it came down sideways, it would have been all over. So in other words, a half dozen terrorists who can gain access to America and hide in plain sight can kill hundreds of thousands of Americans or more. Or more. And we're giving out green cards like you're giving out library cards. Can you imagine anything dumber than this?
No, I can't. It's horrifying.
I like to ask questions to make people think. Would you get on an airplane if you saw people sneaking past TSA?
Absolutely not.
Neither would I. but we're being forced to live among millions of people who snuck past the same sort of a vetting process we conducted ports of entry.
And truly, no one is safe.
No.
No, just like you said, I'm not safe here, nestled in the mountains anymore than some guy would be in the mountains of Minnesota or in Oklahoma or anywhere else. No one is safe because they are everywhere.
They're everywhere. And if it's biological warfare, look at what happened with COVID. So look at what we're doing with open borders. We're destroying the middle class. We're destroying wages. We're destroying public safety. And we're destroying national security and public health. How's that for a good news story? These are self-inflicted wounds. These are self-inflicted wounds. And that's what I don't get. Why was there a 9/11 commission? You have Nancy Pelosi running around like the headless chicken or something else, screaming, we need a 9/11 style commission over what happened January 6th. Never mind what happened at the White House during the summer. By the way, the only gun that was recovered from January 6th, according to the testimony, was the gun that was fired by a federal officer who killed an unarmed woman. And to my knowledge, they still haven't identified the shooter, by the way.
Now, look, no, they have not.
I was a federal agent, and we're talking about one of the people who would have been a colleague of mine. But I also believe in accountability. So I want someone to explain to me how an unarmed woman was shot, and we still don't know the identity of the shooter. What do you think of that one?
I think it's criminal.
Look,
I mean, it's straight up.
We're supposed to be able to look at the men and women of law enforcement as being the people who will protect us. How protected do you feel when somebody, and maybe it was justified, I don't have all the facts, but nevertheless, there's accountability. And I'm going to tell you, I had to qualify with a firearm every 90 days. And I remember we always got the same training about liability, responsibility, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the point is, if you're in a gunfight, and let's say you wind up firing a dozen rounds, every round has a separate investigation attached to it. So you could fire 11 bullets, and they're perfect. Everything is right. It was justified. And you get to number 12, and now you've just committed a felony. Every trigger pull has consequences, and I agree with that. You know, we're not kids running around with cap pistols like we used to do when we were children. You pull the trigger, this is literally deadly serious. Every trigger pull has a separate memo, a separate investigation attached to it. You have a woman who was shot and killed, and to my knowledge, we still don't know who the shooter was or what the circumstances were to justify the shooting, if there was justification. But yet, the riots that leveled businesses across the country, the riots where dozens of federal officers were badly injured at the White House, is still described as a mostly peaceful demonstration, not an attempt at insurrection. The fire at the church across the street from the White House, ignored. Problem is, when you keep lying, you lose credibility. And I don't understand how people vote for these politicians. I mean, look at Blumenthal, who claimed to have had some incredible military background, that it was all a fantasy. Or Elizabeth Warren, who got, I believe, a free ride. I could be mistaken, but that's what I believe, because she claimed to have been Native American. And then used that as an argument when she ran for office. Turns out she wasn't. And everyone went nuts when Donald Trump, as only Donald Trump could, labeled her Pocahontas. And I'm not standing up for Donald Trump. But my goodness. That's fraud. And yet she gets elected, almost ran successfully for the presidency. You know, if I lied on an application for my job, I wouldn't have gotten the job. It would have been all over. And this woman lies about that. Blumenthal lies about that. They're all caught lying through their teeth, and they still win election. What does it say about the American people? When people lie to you, it's over. Any politician who could say to you, for America to lead, we need to import the world's best and brightest, that person shouldn't be able to successfully run for dog catcher. Yes, I want the truly exceptional to come to America. Elon Musk, Albert Einstein, you know, we have a list of people who did that. We talked about the, you know, Von Braun and his crew. He served a purpose for America's greater good. I get that. I'm okay with the decision that he was brought here, but people should still learn what the guy did before he came to America. We need to know these things. Our students need to be taught these things. And you also need to know that people are complex. We're not all good or all bad. You know, John Wayne said something once, and now we're going to rename the airport. Whoa, slow down, Charlie. I mean, I know I've said some dumbass things in my life. I know everybody does because we all do. We're human, and we misspeak, and sometimes things come out sideways, and you say, gee whiz, I wish I could have put a cork in my mouth that day. So you make one statement, and any of the things that you did that were really great and wonderful goes out the window because on a bad day, you said something really dumb. Wow. I guess no one's been paying attention to Joe Biden lately. But you understand my point. This cancel culture, and we're going to eliminate the study of history. You've got to be out of your mind. Because it's through the study of history that we learn how to repeat the mistakes of history. And when you look at the 9/11 Commission report, and everyone says, we need a 9/11 style commission. I'd love to say to Nancy, hey, Nancy, have you ever read the damn thing? You see what it says about immigration? Because that's what I was hoping that Donald Trump would have said to Joe Biden. It was crystal clear. They talked about how the 19 hijackers in the aggregate had more than 360 false identities or variations of false identities. Stop and think about that one. And we're giving driver's licenses to people who can't prove who the hell they are. And a driver's license doesn't just let you drive. It also gives you credibility. So if you're going to do business with me and you say, hey, Mike, will you paint my house? Oh, I'd be delighted. Do you have any idea? I'd like to know who you are. Oh, I pull out my driver's license. I pull out some credit cards. And you go, oh, this guy's legit. Okay, cool. So a document like that gives the bearer credibility. Illegal aliens shouldn't have credibility. Well, we've got to give them driver's licenses. How else will they get to work? Well, wait a minute. Why are they working?
Exactly. What are they even doing here?
So we're going to make it easier for them to get to the job so they can displace more Americans? Boy, that should make everybody happy when you stop and think about it. I am telling you, we used to arrest people who came on tourist visas or student visas. The visa didn't have to expire. If we could prove they were working without authority, we handcuffed them and we deported them. No work for you. The Labor Department used to run immigration to protect wages and jobs. It was Roosevelt that started that during the Depression to make sure that Americans wouldn't have to compete with foreign workers. And Alan Greenspan comes along and speaks glowingly about the idea of forcing Americans to compete with foreign workers to get rid of their wage premium. Let's bring in the foreign workers to kill the wages for Americans. He actually said it before a hearing, and the media won't report on it. I watched the hearing live. I was so angry. I was on a radio show the next day, and I was still breathing fire, and the young lady whose show I was on said to me, what did you think when you were watching Greenspan say that? And I said, well, I knew I was witnessing it first. She said, Mike, I know you well enough to know this is dangerous, but I'd love to know what kind of a first you thought it was. And I said, well, it was the first time I'd ever seen somebody testify who was suffering from rigor mortis. I detest that guy. We're going to solve wage inequality by forcing American high-tech workers to compete with foreign workers to kill their salaries. Why in the world are we allowing this to happen to us? This is not a government that stands behind Americans. If our government is standing behind you, folks, you better be wearing Kevlar on your back because they probably are holding a knife. I've never heard of anything this outrageous in my life. We need to give the illegals driver's licenses so they can get to their jobs. What happened to the notion of protecting jobs and wages for Americans? I'm serious. I want someone to answer that question for me. It's an outrage. Outrage. And we don't even know who they are. And every once in a while, there'll be a horror story like we've had in New York. It's happened a few times, and it sickens me. where some very wealthy people, you know, you understand people living in poverty and they're desperate to go to work and they hire somebody and the person turns out to be a lunatic. But imagine somebody in a duplex apartment in Manhattan. The apartment is worth maybe $25 million, and they have artwork and all kinds of stuff. Oh, and they're two little kids. And they hire some woman from the Caribbean. They don't know who the hell she is, but they hire her. And one day they come home, and the house is spattered with blood because she bludgeoned them to death. You're worth how much money to have a house that costs $25 million, and you're dumb enough to hire an illegal alien to watch your babies? We're nuts. We've lost our minds. You tell me I'm wrong. Please, tell me I'm wrong, James. Where am I getting this sideways?
I can't. You're spot on, just like you always are, Mike. I don't understand it. I mean, and you go back to what you were talking about with these people lying, and we, you know, we catch them red-handed. Eric Swalwell carried on with some Chinese Mata Hari for a couple of years, arranged for her to get out of town when things got too hot, and he's still on the intelligence committee.
That she gave him, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, actually, they should make him the chairman of the lack of intelligence committee.
Yeah, God, yeah. And he's not going anywhere.
No. Hell, he'll probably be the presidential candidate next cycle. I mean, what are we doing? You know, when I was interviewed for my job, it was an inquisition. It wasn't an interview. It went on for hours. And Joe Biden is now the president, and Kamala Harris, who couldn't win a single vote in the primary, is literally a heartbeat away from the presidency. My gosh, it takes my breath away. And Joe Biden understands bribery. That's all that he can think about. He went down to Georgia. He made it clear. You vote for these two Senate candidates and I'll mail you a check for $2,000. Wow. He wasn't kidding. That's all they think about. And now they're offering Manchin's wife $160,000 job. Why? In the hopes that Manchin will vote the way they want because he's been like the Democrat holdout?
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe they have to throw in a Ferrari and it'll be okay. I mean, what are we doing? I am telling you we need a new position in the government, the official auctioneer. You know, you look at Pelosi with that big gavel. She's got all the equipment you need. Just get a goddamn auctioneer up there, right?
Exactly.
Can you picture that?
Somebody like Mr. Haney.
Remember when they used to sell tobacco at the auctions and what that looked and sounded like? Well, there you go. Let Nancy give whoever it is the gavel, and away we go. We've got all the equipment we need, the official auctioneer. They're auctioning off the future of America and with it the future of our children and their children. And we're sitting by passively. And I look at the comments in my articles, well, it's the Democrats this, and it's, you know, no.
No, it isn't.
In the world, did George W. Bush do what he did with the Homeland Security Department? He violated the Homeland Security Act. I read it on your program the last time.
Right.
He cut immigration into multiple pieces, and then he folded in customs and agriculture and TSA. Why? He diluted immigration because he's a globalist. That's why his brother said that illegal immigration was an act of love. An act of love. And you look at the craziness. And they don't want anyone to let people know when illegal aliens try to get guns, even though it's a 10-year felony, because we have to protect the immigrants. But if you're a law-abiding American, they're going to come for your firearms. I mean, what are we doing? Where, at some point, is anybody going to make the politicians accountable? And I want people to please stop this garbage about Democrat versus Republican. I remember talking to my mother-in-law. She passed away a number of years ago. May she rest in peace. We got into this conversation, and she asked me how I came to this idea of going to Congress, and I explained it to her. She said, well, I know I have a good member of Congress. I said, what's his name? She said, I don't know. Conversation. I said, well, how do you know he's good if you don't know his name? He's a Democrat.
Right,
before
right.
Before you folks start laughing, I've heard the same garbage on the other side. Well, at least I got a Republican congressman. Really? Like John Boehner, maybe?
Oh,
or Paul
God.
Ryan? Or John McCain?
Yeah, and
Trump
so much
wrong
of that
for
is just
attacking McCain for his military service. But my gosh, my goodness gracious, both parties have done this. Was Bob Goodlatte wants to flood America with H-1B visas, and now he's back probably practicing law and doing exactly that? Let's get away from this garbage. And I said to my mother-in-law back then, I said, do you know that your congressman wants to give illegal aliens U.S. citizenship? And she went berserk. She said, do you know the night before we took the citizenship test, we were up all night running to the bathroom? We were so scared. And you're telling me, how do you know that that's the case? I said, because every Democrat in New York that's a member of Congress has voted for comprehensive immigration reform. They want to give them citizenship. And she went berserk. She said, that's crazy. I said, well, you like him. She says, well, he's pro-choice. I said, you're more than 80 years old. Do you need an abortion?
That's good.
Well, she couldn't stop laughing either, by the way. Hey, let's not cut to the chase. Let's cut to the outcome, you know? But, I mean, goodness gracious. And we have this litmus test. And I think abortions are terrible, but I also believe women have a right to make decisions for themselves, and we can disagree. And that's the other thing that upsets me about America. We used to be able to sit down and disagree with each other and accept the fact that as Americans, it's our right. If you listen to somebody who's really terrific, it's Alan Dershowitz. He speaks very clearly about the ability to state your case, and when people disagree, they disagree. Get over it. When you start destroying the First Amendment, you destroy democracy, you destroy our freedoms. And frankly, I want people to tell us how stupid they are. I don't want people to be censored. That's wrong. If you're really that screwed up, you need to go out there and stand on a soapbox and make it clear to the world that you're a yo-yo. What do you think of that?
To be forewarned is to be forearmed in those sorts of situations. Yeah. You don't have to listen. If they don't like what you say, Mike, or they don't like what I say, they can change the
channel.
Change the channel.
Change the channel.
You know, you are your own censor.
Well, but that's
you know,
the whole
decide.
Point. We raised a generation of kids who don't understand competition, right? And that's what
right.
they've really
oh, yeah.
done, because think about it. This is communism. And by the way, for those of you capitalists out there, and we talked about this yesterday, and I have to make this point. I was on a conservative program. And this guy was really worked up. And he said, those damn Democrats want a guarantee of outcome, but you don't get that in a capitalist system. You have guarantee of opportunity, not outcome. I said, so in America, there is no guarantee of outcome. He said, absolutely not. I said, you sure about that? He said, absolutely. I said, what would you say if I could prove to you with just two words that you're getting it wrong? He said, no way in hell. I said, okay. Are you folks ready for the two words? Golden parachute. Think about that. We hire these CEOs. You put them in charge of billion-dollar companies. They screw the pooch, and they waltz out the door with a check for $20 million, $30 million, $50 million, whatever it is. And meanwhile, the people who lose their job through no fault of their own, but because there was a yo-yo running the company, they get walked out the door by an armed security officer who makes certain they don't take a pen or a stapler with the company logo on it. Don't tell me there's no guarantee of outcome in America today. Trump was right. The system is rigged. It's the political system and it's the economic system. There was an economist at the Princeton University who said that America, and this was perhaps 10 years ago, he said America had stopped being a republic and had become an oligarchy. And I don't know if you saw the latest. I've got to read what this is about because I only saw the headline. But apparently now Bill Gates, the all-knowing, all-seeing, master of the universe, is trying to figure out how to dim the sun. I kid you not. These people are crazy.
Yes.
They
yes,
are
absolutely.
Absolutely bats. And they are drunk with power. I'm thinking of writing an article called Governing Under the Influence of Money, and because they become intoxicated with power. We're going to dim the sun. I'm actually willing to put them on a rocket and send them in that direction and tell them to have at it. What are we doing? What are we listening to? Bill Gates dropped out of college. He did not take a degree in medicine. He did not take a degree in astrophysics. but he's going to dim the sun, and he's behind vaccines and everything else. Who are we listening to? Just because somebody has a lot of money doesn't mean they're smart. Think about that.
Joe Biden, case in point.
Oh, my goodness. Folks, we need to have the guts to stand up to somebody and say, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
That's crazy.
One of the tricks con artists use is you ask them a question. They don't want to answer. I worked with some con artists. After 3 weeks, I left. They were selling magazines and dictionaries, subscriptions. And I said, these guys are scammers. I quit. And a year later, I enjoyed reading that they all went to jail. But they taught us, the people that worked there, well, if someone asks you a question, you don't want the answer. They taught us how to do double talk. And they said, and then you walk up to the guy and you shake their hand, you look them in the eye and you say, now you understand, right? And 90% of the people will be too intimidated to admit they don't understand. Folks, it's empowering to look some guy in the eye and say, I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Look them square in the eye and make it clear you're not about to be bullied or bamboozled. This is a scam. Madoff was nobody compared to these politicians. And we're allowing this to happen. Stop the nonsense about Democrat versus Republican. Look at them as individuals. Yes, there are some good Democrats and there are some good Republicans. Maybe four of each, okay?
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe, on a good day. But
yeah.
We've got to be mindful of the games they're playing, the magic act that they're pulling on us, the fact that they've prostituted themselves in their office. And that's the issue. You know, how many people have said to me, well, you can't deport 11 million. We may as well give them legal status. I said, what does that mean? No law gets enforced more than a fraction of a percent. No one throws their hands up and say we can't do anything about it. You know, if we did this with drunk driving, we would go from a 0.08 blood alcohol level to 3.0. Think about it. You can't be vertical at 3.0. Then nobody at 3.0 could drive a car and have an accident. So you do that, and 6 months later, you hold a news conference, you say, look at that, we changed the law, and we haven't had a single fatality as the result of somebody who was legally drunk behind the wheel. Isn't that what they're doing with immigration? Instead
sure.
of saying, how do we fix the problem, it's the equivalent of saying, yeah, 3.0. You'd probably be in the morgue, but that's okay, because no one will be legally drunk and driving. And meanwhile, you'll have so many dead bodies, they'll be lining the sides of the road like firewood. And that's what they're doing to immigration, and they've got us bamboozled. And you're not compassionate, and you're a xenophobe. Yeah, well, you're a dumbass. That's my answer when I hear that.
Yeah, spot on, as always.
What am I missing here, James?
Nothing. You're not missing a thing, Mike. And the thing that I don't know when it's going to happen, but at some point it's got to. There's either going to be, and I'm not saying armed insurrection. I'm saying, just like you said, people are going to go to Washington at some point. They're going to say, enough. Enough. And it's either going to be that, or they're just going to turn their backs completely on whatever it is that these left-wing boobs come up with. They'll just ignore it.
They will. And you know, the day is coming. You know, there was an interesting program about Pepsi versus Coca-Cola, the soda wars. And Coca-Cola came out with this great idea. Let's change the formula, if you remember that. And they couldn't sell this stuff for free, okay? And after a couple of months, they went back to the original formula, and people were so happy to get the original formula back that they bought record quantities of Coca-Cola. How long before Americans want the original formula back that built this country? How long before we say enough of this garbage? You know, this notion of scapegoating people because of color is a tactic that caused the Holocaust. My parents said to me, don't be jealous of someone who's doing better than you. Learn from their ability to be successful. We're being told now that if someone does better than you, that maybe it's because of skin color. So what you're really doing is telling people if they're the wrong color, whatever the hell that is, because I don't know of any wrong color, that you're doomed to fail because you're the wrong color and someone else is going to steal your success from you. No one's going to steal anyone's success from anybody. the whole point to America is that anybody can write the next great American success story. You look at Ben Carson. You look at Barack Obama, by the way, if anybody's paying attention. This isn't about black or white. This is about turning Americans against one another. And I started to say this, and I didn't finish, and I'm glad we have just about a minute or so. I'm going to just do this. America started with slavery so it can never be redeemed. Think back to what psychiatrists did in the 50s. Think about the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with prefrontal lobotomies. Could it be any more barbaric or outrageous than that? So does that mean that we should never again honor doctors or surgeons or psychiatrists and end those professions because they did some really terrible things? Of course not. We learn from our mistakes and we move on. And one of the typical ploys, our immigration laws used to exclude people from China, and we did. But that was 100 years ago. What does that have to do with today? These are the games that are being played by very cunning swindle experts, con artists. We really need to focus not on where America has been, but on where it is and where it can go if only we stick together and are united by one factor and one factor alone, the fact that we are all Americans and that our birthright is the Constitution of the United States of America. This other stuff, it's a distraction. It's no different from Tokyo Rose during the Second World War trying to demoralize the troops. Our troops were smart enough to laugh her off back then. Americans have to be smart enough to laugh off these idiots today. What do you think of that as a closing thought for you?
I think that, as usual, Mike, you've been a tour de force on the program tonight, and I find no, like Pontius Pilate, I find no fault in you.
Oh my goodness! Don't,
absolutely
just don't talk to my wife, because she'll fill your ears.
Okay, well, don't say nothing then. But no, in terms of what we've talked about this evening, let me put it that way.
Fair enough.
We've been talking, ladies and gentlemen, with our friend Michael Cutler. Once again, back for a long overdue visit. I want to thank you, Mike, for your graciousness and, more importantly, for your time. I know that you are in demand these days as this immigration problem is becoming more and more, in the center of public attention now.
It impacts everything. It impacts everything. But please go to my website. It's michaelcutler.net. Check out my articles at frontpagemag.com. and the American Conservative. And, I do my own internet radio program on Friday nights, the Michael Cutler Hour on Blog Talk Radio. And by the way, I'm going to be on with David Webb tomorrow at 10 a.m. East Coast time. David Webb on Sirius XM.
I will be tuning in for that. I will be tuning in for that indeed. I know he's not going to give you the time you need, but I know that you'll make wise use of what you have.
No one's as generous as you are. No one's as generous as you are. And I really love doing your show, and I appreciate everything that you're doing.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. And like I said, again, we appreciate, and I know your time is at a premium. And when you come on here and you give us the benefit of your experience and you do it in such an entertaining and informative way, you always have a home here with us. Michael Cutler, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank
Be
you
well.
So much, Mike.
Stay safe.
Take care, Michael. We'll be talking
soon.
Look
forward to it again. Absolutely.
Man. Is that guy, is he just not fantastic or what? That's a gold mine of a guest right there. Well, that's all the time we got, guys. We took it right down to the wire, as we always do when Mike comes on. Nothing but information, start to finish. Go, man, go. That's what that guy does. Thanks so much. This Thursday, El Guapo, the handsome one, will be taking the night off. And so he won't be on. And I'm thinking we'll probably do 2 hours of ACP on Thursday night as well. I think that's about all the time we've got. Thank you so much for the opportunity to hang around with you and talk about all the stuff that we got to talk about this evening. See you on Thursday. God bless you. God bless America. And we'll be back 7 o'clock taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. Good night.